You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Real Short Box. My name is Kevin.
My name is Donald, and we happen to have a very unspecial guest today.
Well, I wouldn't be so, I wouldn't use those kind of words, sir. This is a very special person who had the honor and the privilege to have viewed the first six episodes of the new television series Krypton, which will be debuting on March 21st.
What is the name of our guest, Kevin?
Fabian X. It is an honor for you to join us. Sir, please talk to the crowd. Let them know.
Well, as I came down deep into the hidden bunker here underneath the brick and steel of this nondescript building, I actually came in with a full security detail because the details I have here are sexy. They're hot.
Are they?
And they are the real deal.
The real deal.
The real deal.
Yes, I have indeed seen the first six episodes of Krypton, a project that has been in development for 3 years.
Yes, since the holidays of 2014 from Mr. Comic Book Writer Man and developer himself, screenwriter himself, David Goyer.
I like to call him David Goiter.
Oh, come on.
He just grows
come on
things.
Man. We met him a few years ago, and he was a nice man.
Was he? I didn't meet him.
Well, I did.
You met him, maybe. Okay. Some of the shit he's written is shameful.
But look, we all have flaws.
It's true.
We all make mistakes, but the thing is, it's all about consistency. And this man has had consistency for over 20 years.
Let's not talk about that.
On and off, on and off, but he's written some decent stuff out there.
Mm. To be fair, he does keep getting work. I mean, so obviously someone's approving of it, you know.
He's doing something right.
You know, but, you know, is he batting 1,000? Absolutely not.
I bet he gives the best, hand jobs around, that guy.
Well, look, sometimes in life, if that is true, sacrifices must be made in order to maintain employment.
understood. So, we're going to talk about, of course, the sci-fi original series, Krypton. And I'm excited about this. This people's not a joke. This is, I know we've done a few of these kind of crank podcast things where we... you know, we're joking around a little bit and just trying to speculate what was going to be taking place. This is the real deal. This is actually, this guy sat through and watched six episodes of this series. Now, I think that the series is going to start out, I don't think it's going to be like a big run. Like, I don't know. I could be wrong, but like 23, 24 episodes or something like that.
Yeah, let me remark on that real quick. You see, in fact... me viewing this is so authentic that we are going to do what every other podcast is doing. And that is, before we even proceed, we must have an advertisement, correct?
Yes, an advertisement. That's going to come from or about a lovely shop called Spiro's Heroes. Kevin, take it away.
Spiro's Heroes, located in Canoga Park, has over 300,000 books. It's a place we call the Temple of Comics, led by the proprietor and owner, Elliot Spiro. Their phone number is 818-709-9019 if you have any questions.
What's their shop hours?
Their shop hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday through Saturday and 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday.
Awesome. Great times. Great shop. All right. Now back to business.
Yeah, that voice was so melodic. I think I'm going to go to Spiro's Heroes after this. Okay. So here's the first thing you need to know about Krypton. There is some complexity here. Now, I feel like you can absorb it relatively, you know, easily, I would say, but explaining it back and regurgitating this back to you is going to take some time. So I know you got to stick with me on this one, but we're going to break down literally everything that's going on here. Okay, first things first, of utter importance. Everyone who is born and lives on Krypton has a British accent.
You don't say.
I do. I mean,
why is it that most sci-fi movies have that? Why do they have British accents?
Do we know where this was filmed?
I believe it was filmed in Montreal, Quebec.
That's interesting.
A heavy French influence in Montreal. So I'm a little surprised that, you know, the English influence has overtaken this. But I'm sorry, Krypton's another planet. It's not in Canada.
That's true. Good point. Yeah.
Some people may argue that they think it is.
The King's English in on us. different planet, an alien planet called Krypton.
Okay, so starting off, this is where we begin. Now, I'm going to ask you guys a question before I proceed.
Sure.
Is the Kryptonian government always unstable?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
It's always some drama.
Okay, no, because this is, I'm curious to this, because it seems like every movie that wants to discuss the future or on another planet is becoming a fascist dictatorship for some reason or another. So we have to start with Val-El. Now, I know I'm going to say these names a couple times. These are hard to remember. Val-El, who is the final member of the council of the original government in Kandor. Kandor, of course, being a city in Krypton. He is opposing Rao. Does this name mean anything to anyone? Rao.
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 He is a living god, as he would explain himself, and he's a man. He has a gold mask that has faces that look in many directions. It's like a
kind of like Janus in a way.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure because my thing is I don't read Superman religiously, so I couldn't tell you this. But I mean, if you guys have not heard of Rao, this kind of confirms some of my suspicions that this is not going to 100% be based on the comic.
It's going to be some liberties taken.
Yeah. So anyway, he opposes Rao because Rao wants absolute power as opposed to a council, which is seems to be the form of government there.
He's kind of like a Caesar type character.
Basically, yes. That's what he is. And when Val-El decides that he is not going to pledge allegiance to Rao, what do you think happens? I'll tell you exactly what happens. He walks out into the Forbidden Zone, and they pull the bridge out from underneath him, and he just falls and falls and falls and falls. So this is how we begin.
So the Phantom Zone. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. So this is how we are beginning everything right now. So now, of course, his grandson watches this happen, and his grandson is the main character of this television series. His name is Seg-El.
Yes. I believe that is Superman's grandfather.
Yes, that is Superman's grandfather, and he is an actual character.
I was going to do the big reveal in a few sentences, but yeah, you're absolutely correct. Okay, now we have some consistency. This is what I like to hear. So it starts off with him and his buddy who owns a Kryptonian bar. I don't remember what his name is, but he's just called his best friend. His name escapes me because that's how memorable he is, to be perfectly honest.
Now let me ask you, though, is he a older gentleman or younger?
About 21, 22.
Of course. Okay.
Abercrombie and Fitch looking fella?
You can't have a superhero series where it's an old dude as like the lead. I don't know why this doesn't... I don't remember this existing in television here. I could be wrong.
I think it has to do with just demographics. And
oh, of course, demographics.
You know, you want to have nice, fresh, attractive faces on TV. So
well, I get that. But if Seg is the grandfather, what about his son?
Jor-El.
Right. So, it's obviously taking place before he has a son, which I also, it's just, come on.
You know the biases are against people who are not in the AARP club. You have to understand that.
Well, I know this isn't on CBS. I get that.
So he's about 21, and yes, the Abercrombie model is accurate. He does wear tight leather coats.
Oh, there you go.
And form-fit jeans.
Oh, that's a nice jacket he's got on, too.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
This is how this works. So, after we establish who this guy is, he gets into a bar fight that's relatively comedic. I mean, we're not talking Laurel and Hardy, but it's, you know, kind of humorous, I guess. We then establish Allura Zod.
Huh.
Does this name mean anything?
That Zod name sounds very familiar.
Okay. Yes. Very alluring.
And she is the leader of the Sagittari.
Not Sagittarius, but Sagittari.
Sagittari, yeah. Uh-huh. Basically a Rao's army.
Hmm.
Okay. And she's in a hand-to-hand fistfight with her daughter, Lyta Zod.
Hmm.
Okay.
Interesting.
They get into this big fight, and Allura throws a stranglehold around her daughter, and she says, "Beg for mercy." Her daughter does beg for mercy. And you know how her mother responds? She says, "There is no mercy when you're dealing with the commoners."
Mm-hmm.
So she takes a knife and stabs her right through the hand.
Mm. Oh, that's it?
Right through the hand. That's, yeah. I mean, no, look.
I would have killed her.
You know, there is some of that in this. I just want you to know there are family members killing each other, especially.
Yes.
Alora is a young. You want to talk about screwed up? Alora goes out with her brother to on some mission that their father's training them for, and there's one respirator out there.
Uh-oh.
And they have to fight for who gets the respirator.
Wow.
And Alora wins, and her brother died.
So this is very Spartan-esque in a sense, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just the difference is they're not really surrounded by enemies. There's actually, they're dealing with a so-called terrorist group, more or less than anything. They don't really have a substantial outside enemy. I don't think Rao's control is in question at this point of the show, at least. He kind of has that iron fist rule, and people worship him as a living god. Okay.
Like Xerxes.
So Zod's house is kind of very much in power.
No, they lead the military. Rao is just Rao, and then I would say the Vex house has more control than the Zod house.
Vex house?
Yes.
Have you heard of that before?
Daron and Nisa Vex.
I don't remember a Vex house. I mean there might have been, but
yeah. But they come back. The Zods come back plenty in my story.
Is it V-E-X?
V-E-X. You got it.
I'm gonna look that shit up.
Okay. So, so of course, after this, Seg-El, who I'll just call Seg, is out and about and confronted, by a man who's wearing a Detroit Tigers hat named Adam Strange.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard that, Adam Strange was gonna be there. Sean, Sipos? I think it's his name. Sipos?
Yeah, best way to pronounce it. Yeah. Sounds very Greek.
Yeah, he's was in like Vampire Diaries and that sci-fi show Dark Matter, I think is what it was. Yeah, I remember that. He shows up to warn Seg, right? Yes. Yeah, okay.
He's coming from Earth and he's from the future.
Oh, yes. He shows up to warn Seg that some bad people want to destroy Krypton, and it creates this like paradoxical question with Seg is how do you protect the future of the universe knowing full well that your own planet is going to die?
Yes.
Am I correct?
Yes. You're very on there, actually. You're absolutely on. Now, the reason that we know, by the way, that he's from the future and not from Krypton, here it is, no British accent.
Ah.
So this is all very vital stuff here. So Adam Strange comes, and what he does at this point is he hands him, I don't know the exact term, but it's like a crystal key with the S symbol on it.
Ah, yes, the symbol of hope.
And this is Val-El's key to Val-El, his grandfather's Fortress of Solitude. Because there's lots of Fortresses of Solitude, apparently, in the world of Superman. There's just not his. There is Val-El's, too.
I guess they'll have your own private temple. Everyone has one.
Yes, the great-grandfather of Superman, Val-El. There's a good spoiler for you.
You know what? The Vex house did exist. There was a character called Kar-Vex. It was a Kryptonian criminal banished to the Phantom Zone. She was one of the criminals released by General Zod to become sleeper agents on Earth. So this is looks like it's relatively recent, but I don't know how far back the Vex house existed before that, but this is does seem to be pretty recent. Kar-Vex, who was released by Zod. So apparently that hints to something that we might see.
In the future.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Now, the Vexes in this one are Daron Vex, who's kind of like the hatchet man of Rao. He's his number one in command. While Alora Zod, I'm going to be himming and hawing a lot on these names. So I don't want to mess these up. Alora Zod is running the Sagittari army. Her daughter is Lyta Zod and Dev M. Okay. Now, I do not believe these are biological children. I believe these are clone children because this is a thing on Krypton, apparently.
Cloning kids.
Yeah, this is a thing. So once he gets this crystal, Seg-El takes it to his mother, Cherise-El, and dad, whose name escapes me, and unfortunately I couldn't find out. Doesn't matter. They're not in our story for a very long time. Cherise-El then steals a ship and takes him to the Fortress of Solitude, which is in the so-called Phantom Zone, or the Outworld, or however, because they're kind of surrounded by a bubble, like in the Simpsons movie, you know, a dome, and then everything outside of that is, you know, it's forbidden, basically.
Oh, you're not allowed to go outside of it.
Yeah, that's Val-El, but that's where Val-El's Fortress of Solitude is. Now, this is where the key is. Val-El is a hologram, much like Russell Crowe in the Man of Steel movie. He is a hologram, but what does Val-El say? the reason that they had so many problems with him is because he knew of the existence of Brainiac, the Collector of Worlds.
So Brainiac's going to be in this.
The Collector, he is.
Yeah, they've already, I think they already revealed that in some articles and stuff, that there was going to be Brainiac and then possibly Doomsday as well, which I don't know why. Every time they do a Superman thing now, it's like...
We need Doomsday.
It's Lex Luthor, it's General Zod, mm-hmm. and it's Doomsday.
Yeah, Brainiac, we're finally getting to see
Brainiac's
that.
Enough! That motherfucker's mean as shit, you know what I mean? He's cold, he's calculating, he's a collector of worlds, but still, like, the guy could wipe out a whole planet if he wanted to. He doesn't want to. He wants to, you know...
And he's brilliant.
...collect and keep. And that's his thing, and that's great. But, like, if push came to shove, I guess he would be able to. Technically, he has the ability to destroy an entire planet. He is a very strong guy or character. So I don't know why they need more than him. But maybe, you know, maybe Doomsday's like for another time, or like maybe he'll be an instrument of Brainiac, you know, that he's created this thing to stop any uprisings on the planet or something. I don't know.
Well, those answers will come.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
So the thing is like that. So that's their number one concern, obviously, is that Rao did not want to acknowledge the existence of Brainiac, did not want to acknowledge the possibility. So Val-El can reveal that to the worlds of Krypton, so to speak, and they want that message suppressed, not because they're evil and nefarious, because they really don't believe that Brainiac is the threat that Val-El believes.
So because of this, then the House of El has kind of been a Kryptonian outcast.
Absolutely.
Like, they're considered troublemakers, or,
yes,
you know, whatever you would call it, rubble rousers or something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so you have a guy that has to try to stop things from being destroyed. The grandfather of Superman having to stop everything from being destroyed. Not the planet Krypton, of course, but just stuff that's taking place on Krypton now, because Krypton needs to last long enough for him to produce a son, and for his son to produce a son, and then shoot his son out into a rocket to Earth.
And carry on the legacy of Krypton.
And carry on the legacy, yeah. So otherwise, if he does not stop what's taking place, the planet could possibly end there.
Much sooner than expected.
Yeah, much sooner than expected, am I correct?
See, it's not exactly that simple, but it is, you're absolutely on board in a lot of ways, because there's a few details I'd like to add. But unfortunately, I'm going to have to come back to that, because I don't want to jump around too much. But
sure,
forgive us.
If I can, no. If you catch me like saying exactly what you said, please stop me. But there's already a few things that I will touch on. So after this happens, apparently they can track the movement of these ships. Why not? I mean, they're Krypton, you know. Apparently, like when they pay for things, they have like a little like. It's like a little electronic device, and you just put it next to someone else's electronic device, and that's your money. Which is not completely too far away in the future, to be honest with you.
The Krypton Express card. Here you go.
Yeah, as we've moved more and more to our credit cards.
Cryptocurrency?
There we go. Very good. I like that.
So word gets to Deron Vex, the hatchet man of the Rao regime. Vex quickly declares the parents as treasonous.
Mm-hmm.
So as the parents are sitting in their thing and they're like, my God, you know, you have to stop pretending, or not pretending, you have to stop living the legacy of an L. You need to, like, seriously move on, kid. They hide him in the apartment so that mom and dad end up getting captured by the Sagittari. So once we get to here, they're on trial, which is, you know, like everything else, they just stand in the middle, like Zod and his other two folks in the first Superman film. They just stand there and they look up at this person who's perched up, and it's Rao. And Rao's got his big gold mask on with six faces. And I'm sure there's something heavily symbolic about this. It's probably Egyptian, mm-hmm. for all I can tell. But so they're giving this thing, and through events I can't fully explain, like, they're protesting the fact that they're traitors, and Allura Zod just kills them to protect Rao. But it didn't seem like they were going to attack Rao. it wasn't realistic. He was easily 200 feet away.
Right.
What are you going to do? You're not going to have a weapon. You're not going to get there in time. You have a whole army blocking you.
I guess she felt she had probable cause.
Yeah, there you go. You could have that probable cause. It establishes Allura as kind of no nonsense. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, as Donald always likes to say, it's the Uncle Ben moment. We know they're going to die. That's what their function is. They die.
Yep.
It's part of the plot device.
They just die. That's how this happens. So naturally, what happens next? Of course, Seg's on the run. Because he just has to be on the run, like the Incredible Hulk. He's just on the run. So Seg and Adam go back to the Fortress of Solitude, and now their new mission is to work with Val-El to stop Brainiac. All right? Now, the way that you know Brainiac is coming is very similar to the Silver Surfer and Galactus. He sends out probes, and in the probe is a parasite. When the parasite escapes the probe, finds a human host, and they transport all the information about the world back to Brainiac to see if it is worthy of collection. Does this sound accurate to the story at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's fair enough, I guess. Yeah. I don't remember putting a human host or anything like that in particular, but that's definitely feasible within his realm, I would say.
Okay. So it infects this kind of poor lady, you know, one of those ladies who has a little adorable daughter who, you know, can barely afford food and everybody helps her with food and stuff. It infects her, and she does broadcast.
Grandma?
It's all right. It's all right, buddy. It's okay.
I'm okay.
Okay. And she's even extra, I don't know what that was about, and she's even extra, you know, likable because she's sad in a British accent.
Oh, of course.
I keep coming back to this. So, essentially what happens is, we're in the middle of a big thing here where Rao is claiming that terrorists, local terrorists inside the populations are going to start, are plotting to overthrow the government. Obviously, it's not a pleasant government. We get this. But instead, what we run into here is we want to save this woman. They're so preoccupied with these terrorists that they're not thinking about the fact that this woman is giving, you know, information to Brainiac. Because I would say that Rao and Vex do acknowledge the possibility of Brainiac. They just refuse to accept it. So it infects their friend. They do their research. The friend dies. It's tragic. Mm. It's just so tragic. Mm. So you start to wonder, you know, the parasite has got to be gone for good. Because they're sitting here trying to analyze this parasite back at the fortress, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in a real funny twist, the parasite infects Rao.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Nice little twist there.
Okay.
It infects Rao. Now, what was bizarre is it was at the end of episode 4 that happened. In episode 5, there was no Rao in the episode, which really concerned me from a writing standpoint. I'm like, whoa. You can't drop this hammer and then just all of a sudden not
follow through.
It's just, it's a little odd. So, long story short, Seg gets into the underground, which he is captured by the main terrorist. And this main terrorist is just questioning him and doing everything he does. Seg escapes. And he's underneath the tunnel systems, and he comes across a group of people that are the protectors of the S symbol, right? Now, these protectors are people that this terrorist keeps looking for, who I will reveal in a second. Adam Strange meets up with Seg. This is where it gets a little complex. So Adam Strange has not been telling the whole truth. There is something not right here.
Something strange?
Something strange. And this terrorist is none other than a time-traveling General Zod.
Oh. Now that's a twist.
Okay, so now we have time travel. Well, we had time travel with Adam, but now we have more time travel.
Adam invented a device. It's about palm-sized.
What, Zetabeam, I think?
Yes, thank you. That is it, the Zetabeam. Yeah. The Zetabeam. So, he, of course, they meet. He says, that is General Zod, the man who will destroy our world. And General Zod says, that is Adam Strange, the man who did not tell you that the collection of your world and the disruption and explosion of your world by Brainiac is inevitable. So now we have people fighting amongst each other, and Seg sides with General Zod. And he ties up Adam Strange, calling him, you know, a traitorous liar, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So, in the context of the fact that now people are accepting Brainiac is happening. And as we can tell right now, General Zod is actually a fighter for good. As we come to find out, which is very interesting, they get into a big fight with the protectors of the S symbol, right? And it turns out that his symbol, his S symbol that was given to him earlier, can also open another door. And that door is the only thing that can save them from Brainiac. Doomsday.
Okay. That's so stupid.
He is locked up in ice. And, of course, the idea comes that if you release Doomsday, can he get rid of Brainiac? Sure. Is he uncontrollable?
Yes.
And Val-El and various other people have created Doomsday.
So you create a Catch-22 situation.
Yeah. Okay, but that's not terrible, I guess. When we found the origin of Doomsday, it really wasn't. It was kind of vague, I guess, in a way, because somebody was experimenting on this baby that they would shoot out onto this planet. I don't remember which planet it was, but they'd shoot this baby out to be just torn apart by these demon things or whatever, and then he'd collect the DNA of what's left of the dead baby, and would then clone and create another one. And throw it out, and it would last a little longer, but then be tore up. And then he just kept doing this, like, day after day after day, dead babies. So it was kind of vicious in a way, but yeah. And then eventually he created something that, through genetic, it's not modification, but just through time and genetics, it's just like adapting. In other words, it's adapted over the centuries or the years that it was being tormented and tortured and ripped apart and stuff, to where it can now adapt. If somebody has the ability to burn holes through things, if they burn a hole through him, he, when he comes back, he can heal himself from that kind of thing. You know, it's basically an adaptoid. So I could see how they would want to create something like that, because, or thaw out something like that, because it can be the only thing to destroy Brainiac. And it's a quick fix. But then, yeah, then you unleash something. My only problem is with this, it's much easier to do computer effects and stuff with robotics and, like, robotic-like things. Or just, like, if Brainiac's harbored a human, he's, like, inside of a human, or the probe is, or whatever. You know, you just give him, like, green eyes or something or whatever, and they act very cold and calculated. You know, I get that. But, and even if you show Brainiac, you know, maybe show him more as a robot and less as a human. Or if you just show him as a human, he could just have makeup on and stuff and look like the old school one with the beard, like the goatee dude, which was pretty badass. I used to like that one a lot. But when you're dealing with Doomsday, as we've seen in Superman versus Batman, that turd of a movie, yes. As we've seen in that turd movie, sorry, people that loved it. No. Doomsday in that is so bad. He's like a pathetic looking cave troll thing that from Lord of the Rings, like a reject from that. So I don't understand.
You know, I just had an idea.
How that character, I just don't think it's a good idea to do that if you're, because the special effects were still not there for television.
Right.
I mean, and that's because of the budget. Doing Doomsday right, it's not going to look that great. The only way, if it used practical even, and like put on the spikes and shit like that, I guess, you know, maybe. And if he's like a younger version or something, and he's just gray and has some lumps or something, that's even better. But please, please, please tell me that it's not like all this special effect piece of shit.
Get CGI to death.
Yeah, because when we go to look at The Flash and Gorilla Grodd and stuff that they came out with recently, in the next couple of years, it already didn't look great. I mean, it looked, oh, cool, you know, our character's there on television. But in 5 years from now, when we go to watch that, we're going to be like, Jesus Christ, this is terrible. You know, that we're just advancing so fast. It's not going to look good. That's my complaint.
I was thinking, instead of it being Doomsday they're working on, you think it would have made sense if they would have done, like, Starro instead?
I mean, you definitely could, but I think Starro's such a big scope.
Mm.
Like, basically, we're talking season two with Starro here. Or three, where Starro comes down and conquers everybody except for a small fraction of heroes that are on the run. And the whole season is them hiding and trying to defeat Starro and stuff. And that's like a big scheme of things.
Well, I'm saying like Starro versus Brainiac. You think that could that work as a way to defend themselves from a Brainiac?
Well, you're doing organic within organic. Hmm. I mean, I don't know how Starro would be able to possess robotics and things like that. So I couldn't.
That wouldn't work.
Probably not very well. Not in that thing.
I'm trying to think about other people that haven't used it that could be used as a counter. Metallo, Starro. I'm trying to think of other people that could. Because Doomsday, I'm sick of Doomsday myself.
Doomsday as well. Again, you know, they could create a Bizarro-like type creature.
Well, that was my suggestion for Batman vs. Superman. Had that been the reveal, instead of Doomsday, they turn General Zod, they morph him into a Bizarro, and that would been like the big twist. That would have been awesome, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, I get you want the name reference, Doomsday and stuff. But there were so many other large characters. What's his face? Mongol?
Mongol.
Mongol would be a good choice. He was created before Doomsday. Big, strong, like beastly guy.
Mongol looking.
Right, yeah. He's very intelligent, but just very strong. And using him maybe would have been...
A better idea.
Yeah, a better idea. I don't know. It's just some thoughts.
Well, and wrapping up this this series, there is also a storyline where, as inevitable, is the fact that the Kryptonian government must always be unstable. Daron Vex and Nissa Vex, father and daughter, as well as Allura Zod, Lyta Zod, and Devim, who is the brother of Lyta Zod, are now going to overthrow Ra'al.
Oh, boy.
Because it's just inevitable, you know?
Revolution.
One dictator leads to a new dictator, in which Daron Vex will be the leader. But as they're in the process of doing this, and this is how the sixth episode concludes, Ra'al takes off his mask to have the red Brainiac eyes, and he kills everybody in the room.
Ooh.
Except the Vexes and the Zods. He kills all the soldiers and everything. So now Brainiac is not only in full control of Ra'al, but the parasite is supposed to be parasitic, leave, and then you die. And it seems like it's going to possess Ra'al for a substantial amount of time.
Ooh, that's bad. That's very bad. That's a decision maker right there. That's like having a puppet in the presidency or something, you know, that's you can control.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a very controversial statement you're making there, sir.
I don't see how.
Initially I thought so, but I don't see how either.
There we go. See, even Fabian agrees with me.
I thought you were implying something.
Fabian X.
No, this is a political-free show, which I'm cool with.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, like, from what I heard, we're getting, of course, what you've talked about, we're getting Brainiac, we're getting Doomsday, we're getting Tar-El, which is Seg's father. We're also getting Hawk Girl. Not Hot Girl, which I'm sure she will be, but Hawk Girl.
Hawk Girl.
Thanagarin?
Yes. And there's also rumors, and I don't know if it's true, but there's rumors that at some point we'll see somebody from the Green Lantern Corps.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, and that would, because it would be before, you know, Hal or any of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, they have a sector, so whoever sector that is, it makes sense that maybe they can assist in taking down Brainiac.
Mm-hmm. And let me tell you why this is a good thing, because as of right now, from what I saw, aside from the obvious, like the Doomsdays, who was, by the way, just on ice. You don't really get to see Doomsday in action. And Brainiac, obviously. No one has any superpowers. This is a pretty regular group of people here.
Well, yeah, because they're not exposed to the yellow sun.
Yeah, so naturally, like, when I see things like, for example, the women and the men fighting each other hand-to-hand and the women winning, you know, I'm just kind of like, well, hold on. Wonder Woman I get, living goddess, but you mean... Juiced up, jacked out guy, can't beat up girl? That confused me. And I'm not trying to be sexist or anything, but it was confusing to me because I'm like, I was under the assumption there were superpowers here. Right. There literally are none. Right. It is just so regular. You get all of your basic, you know, stereotypes of dystopian futures. You've got kind of like the poor group that lives in Bartertown, if you're a Mad Max fan. And then, of course, you know, you have
the wealthy people.
The well-ups that are basically all the military. They're all basically military commanders.
Yeah, there wouldn't be, because the Kryptonians got their powers from the Yellow Sun.
Right.
Which isn't in Krypton's universe.
Right.
Right.
So none of them would have powers. If they were all on this planet, they're all just like us. They're all regular people.
And they really are. Like, I mean, it's not even close. Now, the one thing that I do not like about this show, and some people might get it, and I know why they do it, I just don't care for it. There's a lot of palace intrigue type stuff here. A lot of melodrama between the houses. A lot of overacting, if you will.
I think they're kind of trying to steal a little Game of Thrones and trying to put that in there. Sure. You have these different families fighting for power.
Yeah, so, or just pulling from history.
Pulling from history.
You know, that could be too. The thing that I think is going to be a little, I don't know, Seg, when he was in the comics, he was always this old dude, you know, very old crotchety, very hard-lined, Kryptonian, you know, future Kryptonian bloodline, blah, blah, blah. In this, we're going to see such a young version, and he's not only a rebel-rouser, but he's also a very passionate young man. Because I think in this, he's got a love interest.
Yes, it's actually Lyta.
Lyta, yeah. So there's this whole romantic thing I'm sure they're going to play on as well. As they're fighting and trying to save things, they're going to be growing closer and closer.
Is she the mother of Jor-El?
Lyta Zod?
Yes.
She's not. And from what I can tell, let me tell you why. So Lyta Zod, who is the daughter of Allura Zod, Lyta challenges for leadership of the quote-unquote a division of the clan, if you will. And she is basically helps Seg out illegally, if you will, because she loves him, obviously. Now, Nysa Vex, or Nysa Vex, daughter of Duron Vex, her and Seg have a child together. Now, of course, what that means on Krypton is you each take a drop of blood, put it in a thing, and ta-da, you're in utero.
Wow. You know?
So I believe that is going to be Jor-El. That's just from what everything that I can see here. Unless he has like a second child that I'm unaware of that is not an L. But I'm pretty sure that's going to be it. And a note about Seg. He's very soap opera in his style. Like, you could tell that he doesn't take things very lightly. He's always like, "You killed my father. Oh my god, you ignored Brainiac." Like, he's just very
a little over the top.
In his world, this is, you know, in the world that they've created, there's a lot of that palace intrigue. I mean, Allura Zod, to the point of annoying at points, where she's just like, "I'm a Zod. Do you know what we stand for?" And like all this
over the top
crap. But it's not, but, you know, people like this palace intrigue. I think that teenagers will enjoy this. From what I can tell, this has Netflix written all over it. Mm. There's some foul language. It's not, it's sparing.
Sci-fi foul language, oh my
goodness. It's enough. It's enough.
Well, like, isn't it USA Network? And one other network is now saying that they're going to be dropping F-bombs and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, in that new Tupac Shakur, new Notorious B.I.G. Drama in USA, they're going to.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're like, "Yeah, well, fuck it."
Yeah, so I mean, essentially though, there's a lot of there's a web here, guys, and I don't think
web of intrigue.
I don't think six episodes was truly enough for me to. I mean, I saw some holes. I saw some things. It's like anybody who thinks this show is going to change their life, I'm sorry to be the bringer of bad news. It's not. But is it bad? No, it's not bad.
So you would give it, I guess, a 6 out of 10?
Yeah, I think that's relatively fair. Maybe a 5. Okay. I mean, because it's like, it didn't move me.
Didn't move you.
It's not a bad show. It just didn't move me.
You didn't tear up at any point of the powerful scenes of death and destruction.
Okay, just, you know, because I like to make sure to let all of my biases come out. Yes. I do not really watch a lot of superhero shows. I've watched some.
So why are you on the show, then?
No, let me tell you.
Jesus Christ.
Let me tell you. I've watched, okay, so The Flash was that one show, the newer Flash, is really intriguing me. But naturally, you know, it gets bogged down in complexity and whatever. But there are times in that Flash show that I'm like, wow, this is acting. Or, man, what a good story, you know, point there. You know, something of that nature.
Some good writing.
Yeah, here, the writing didn't wow me. It just didn't. I mean, but like I said, I don't, if you are a true rabid comic book fan, this show is all you,
especially if you love everything that's about Superman. This will be up your alley.
This is all you. Yes. Now if you love Superman, I mean, it's 100 years before Superman, so that might not be your thing. But
by the way, one thing I can see being possibly misleading, if you don't know better, you guys mentioned this earlier, since they're just regular people on this planet, if you're expecting, oh my god, a planet of people like Superman, you gotta see people flying everywhere, gonna be battles, I know the heat rays and
You're not going to get that.
You're
not going to get that.
So that could be a possible problem if that's, oh my God, there's one on Krypton. That's going to be awesome. There's going to be this action-packed, you know.
Well, they better still have enough action. But yeah, there's not going to be nobody flying around.
Right.
Although their science is more sophisticated than ours. There could technically be, you know, flying boots
jetpacks or something like that
we could see.
True.
Goyer, I think it was Goyer, said that they have a loose scripted plot for 8 seasons of this show.
You're kidding.
8 seasons.
That's
guys.
Going too far. That's going too far.
8 seasons.
That's going too far. I would say 4 to 5 seasons at most. 8 seasons. That means they're really thinking big.
Yeah.
Maybe they're also a little too full of themselves. They think it's going to last 8 seasons.
Yep. Here's the thing that I found strange is that DC's, their upcoming digital streaming service that they have, they are going to create a prequel to Superman.
To the
character. It's going to be 13 episodes, and it's going to have to deal with Metropolis. It'll follow Lois Lane and Lex Luthor as they investigate the world of fringe science and expose the city's dark and bizarre secrets. So it's like, it's going to come out in 2019. It's supposed to be 13 episodes long. It was originally considered, they were thinking about doing it at Fox, where it would have drawn a comparison to Gotham, but that changed. So now that they're doing the digital service, they want to throw out original content.
Especially with Disney buying Fox, maybe it's not a bad idea.
Right. So they're going to put that on their own digital service. So not only are we going to have Krypton that has to do with way before Superman was born, we're going to have to do with Metropolis, which is before Superman came to be Superman in Metropolis.
To also, you know, go back to Man of Steel, when now it's an alien invasion angle. So now I like Superman's getting very complicated for me at this point. Okay, I mean, I'd be
like a simple immigrant from another planet trying to find his way on Earth. Now it's getting a little too crazy.
Look, and I love when Christopher Reeve added the bumbling idiot factor to Clark Kent. That was not originally there, but when he added that, I'm like, this is actually great. But as to quote the great Donald McKinney right here, he says it all the time, the story is right on the page. Don't screw with it.
We've been talking about that for years.
It's
the source material. The source material is there, respected.
It is like people would say, we need to do a breakdown. We need to storyboard this.
Mm-hmm.
It is already storyboarded.
Oh, yeah.
It is already there.
Mm-hmm.
You can deviate slightly if you would like, but do not. Try not to change the core essence of each character.
The soul of the character.
I mean, making somebody good that's bad and bad that's good and blah, blah, blah. It just doesn't work because we've seen it for so long. I've been raised on Superman comics since I was a little kid. That's what I read for years and years and years and years and years. I know Superman. I'm not going to... I don't want to say it like I'm not going to tolerate this, but I'm not going to be a fan of something that totally pisses on
legacy.
Years of history and legacy that I've been raised on.
And at this point, this year is the 80th anniversary of the character.
And we also have the Superman 1000 coming right around the corner.
Ooh, we got to get our hands on that.
That issue's seminal.
Probably cost like $20, I'm sure. But
written by Brian Michael Bendis, I believe, or he'll at least have a hand in
stories.
It. Because he's going to be taking over the reins of Superman here very shortly. Brian Michael Bendis, I don't know if you know Fabian. God, I'm talking to Fabian. But Brian Michael Bendis has never been in the realm of DC Comics.
He's been a Marvel
for
man.
Like, what, 20 years or
yeah.
something? 15, 20 years? Bendis has been writing Marvel comics, strictly Marvel. So for him to drop Marvel and go to DC is huge. It's huge. I don't know how his writing has been recently, if it's on par with what his earlier work was and stuff. But a lot of people seem to be either very upset or extremely excited by this. I'm in the camp of excited caution or
cautious excitement.
Cautious excitement. Yeah, there we go. That works. Yeah, that works because I just don't know. You know, I don't know what he's going to do with the character. But I will say the red trunks are back, and that makes me so happy. So, so happy.
Brings joy to your little heart, doesn't
yep.
it?
Yep. Yes, it does. He's got underpants on his outside again. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, you know, and another thing about this. Not just this series, but a lot of series. People look at the future so grimly. I guess it's something that I grew up on the Mad Max movies, and the Mad Max movies were great because they were really the only movie that was doing what the Mad Max movies were doing, generally speaking.
And Blade Runner to a lesser extent.
Yeah, Blade Runner's not so pessimistic as it is, you know, it's just questioning what is the purpose, of,
the
life.
Purpose of life.
I get that. And even, you know, if you watch Steel Dawn or, you know, a couple other bizarre, like, apocalyptic, fine. Everyone is now embracing this apocalypse with both feet on the ground.
I think it has to do with the politics of the modern age. You know, a lot of people are feeling down about how life is now. So maybe it kind of reflects kind of the zeitgeist, unfortunately, especially post 9/11. It's just kind of that zeitgeist. A lot of most people feel we're just living in a very dark age and the world could end at any point. The zombie apocalypse can actually really happen.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh no, I get those impressions. I just, the thing is I don't see enough evidence, at least in my own life, that that's likely to happen. And B, where's the optimism about the future? Like, who wants to be that person who's going to make that show or that movie that's optimistic about the future? That I'm interested in now.
I'm not
poo-pooing all these things that, you know, like Maze Runner and everything like that.
Some hope.
Yeah, for real. Like, I mean, it's about that time. I mean, you know, you look at, like, Back to the Future Part 2, look, flying cars, flying skateboards, you know, all that stuff. Like,
right.
So maybe there's when I graded this series, there is that fatigue a little bit of, like, okay, let me guess here. The common people that are living below are the virtuous ones. The people above us are just so rotten and so evil because all they want is power. Oh, and it's a fascist dictator who is very religious. It's like, I want somebody to... There are other forms of evil we can explore at this point.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Right.
We have the most creative people in this world. We can definitely do something different. It'll fatigue me less.
Especially in this room.
Yeah, it'll fatigue me less.
Fabian, I will write you an optimistic, futuristic film. How about that?
I mean, with a voice like that, how could I say no?
Oh, you're too kind. You're too kind. Aww.
Well, there's all the love to be shared. This was great, guys. I very much enjoyed the quick overview of the series. I'm excited, yet still a little cautious, but excited for some of the ideas that they have coming. So we'll see what happens. I mean, after the 6 episodes, who knows what's going to happen at this point. I think they've got their work cut out for them, in other words. And I really appreciate you coming in and taking the time to go over this with us. It's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, it's been an honor, Fabian X.
Well, thank you. It's always an honor to be here. And yeah, maybe next time around, if there's another superhero show you're looking forward to, I will come in and inform you about that.
Or too. You get one of those secret movie screenings. Please let us know.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
And as much as I hate Fabian, I have to admit this was fun. So... thank you all for listening. Thank you all for reaching out to The Real Short Box.
Subscribe to us on iTunes and YouTube and follow us on Instagram.
And get the Spiros Heroes.
Yes. And check out our sponsor, Spiros Heroes. Great shop, great people. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, YouTube. We're all over the place, guys. We're almost at every single convention in Southern California as well, like comic-wise. So if you ever see us and want to reach out, please feel free to. You can also email us.
Donald loves hugs. You give him a hug.
Can I reach out to you on MySpace?
Maybe.
We have to look into that. Friendster. You can reach out us on Friendster.
Then look into it.
You can link into us.
Because I do have my personal song up, you know, right now on my MySpace, you know.
By the way, you know Justin Timberlake owns that now.
Oh, that would explain a lot.
All right, gentlemen, with that, you were listening to The Real Short Box.
My name is Kevin.
I'm Donald.
Fabian X.
And we'll see you
at the comic shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.